Have you ever been in a situation where you found yourself in a domestic violence relationship? Do you know the difference between a healthy relationship versus an unhealthy one? We speak about that tonight as we talk about domestic violence versus healthy relationships. Stay tuned as we discuss this topic and more on the next episode of The Real Girlfriends Across America.
Also known as Kay, and I am hosting the call tonight for Real Girlfriends Across America. We are a company that has a foundation and mission to build lifelong friendships with women across the globe. We will be bringing you hot topics each night, and we are always on the lookout for new topics. Follow us on Facebook at Real Girlfriends Across America and head to our website at realgirlfriends.org. Tonight I have on the call with me Corinne, Tawanda, Annie, and a host of other girls. You guys, check in. Say hello. How are you guys doing?
We're doing amazing.
Hello.
Hello.
All right, and today our topic is something really serious and very painful. We're going to be discussing domestic violence versus healthy relationships. So before we get started, I want you guys to think about a question. Have you ever experienced a violent relationship? And if you haven't experienced a physically violent relationship, have you ever experienced a relationship where somebody was emotionally abusive to you or psychologically? How did you handle those situations? So I'm going to give my own experience first. When I was married, my husband and I would get into, like, say, arguments, right? And it started out, and I don't know if anybody else has experienced, I want to check in with you guys to see if you guys have too, but at first we started out sort of like play fighting each other, right? Like, oh, I push you, you push me, ha, ha, ha. And then after a while, when we would get mad, that playful pushing would become just a little bit too serious. So I wonder if any of you guys have experienced that, like that playful fight that, you know, might have gone too far. Anybody want to speak on that?
This is me. I was in a situation, and I'm not going to get into details about who and what, where, whatever, where it started off, I guess, with playful fighting. And I'm defending one because if you hit me wrong, I'm going to hit you back, and it's going to be 10 times harder than how you hit me. So my ex wanted to always play fight, and I felt like it was going to a direction where it could have turned different, but it never did. And it was one incident where his family member was there and thought that we were in a domestic violence just because, I mean, a domestic relationship just because how he reacted when he wanted to talk to me. And I wasn't trying to have a conversation in front of his family member.
Yeah. So how did you prevent it from going further than it did? Like, was there anything that you did in particular? Like, how did you cut it short? Like, what happened?
I broke up with them. I left the relationship. I can be just as violent, so I wouldn't want to be in a relationship where I feel like someone would want to pull that out of me. So when I seen that happen, I kind of like wanted to remove myself from the situation.
So you left the relationship because of that?
Yeah. That was one of many things, but yeah.
Anybody else?
Hi, this is Tawanda. No, I don't have a personal story, that I could share about a situation like that.
Do you know of anybody?
Oh, yeah, of course. I've had a couple of different situations. I've had a young lady I used to work with that was in a domestic situation to where me and another coworker helped her to get out of it because we felt eventually he would kill her. I've had a good friend of mine actually get murdered from a domestic situation that had been going on for many years with her boyfriend. And I even had a friend one time that I was at her house, and we knew that her boyfriend would fight her, and he happened to do it one night while he came in. We were there. He called in the room. They were talking. He started slapping her around, and, you know, we got involved. But because we were there, and our thing was, after he finished beating her, he might come for us. Like, we got to do something about this. And it was really a bad situation, and it got really, really horrible, really ugly. Of course, the police were called, and then a week later, she was back with him again. So, I've unfortunately been in several encounters with friends and associates that's been in domestic situations, which affected them and affected the friendships.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
Go ahead, Amanda.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I was waiting a little bit. I'm just one of those women who repeatedly got stuck in domestic abuse situations. I've been on the receiving end of a narcissistic husband who was physically and emotionally abusive. After 12 years, I finally left that. And then my second big one, he got involved with drugs, and that's what caused him to become very violent, and had to kick him out. So my biological mother is an alcoholic, and I don't really speak to her anymore. She was very abusive when I was a kid. So it was just something I guess I was used to, and all those things that they say are true that you don't realize you seek it out, but you somehow seek it out in a weird way. But the good part is that, the past like 5 years of my life, I've been getting away from all of that and realizing my worth.
This is Amanda. Most of my experience has been like with emotional abuse and controlling. With my previous marriage, there were a couple of times that it got physical, but I'm convinced I struggle with mental health issues, and I'm convinced that he could try and control me, that he would like, while I was in the psychiatric hospitals, he'd be like the hero and be like, look at me, I'm bringing you pillows and snacks, and yay, I'm the hero. And then he would try and get me out, and then he would like figure out that he couldn't control me. So then he would like push all of the right buttons to get me back into another hospitalization, and then he would look like the hero again.
Yeah. There are different types of domestic violence, right? And I think that a lot of women experience some of them, if not all of them. There's emotional abuse, there's psychological abuse, and there's physical abuse. Now, emotional abuse might be he's constantly insulting you, he's constantly putting you down or trying to embarrass you, or trying to control everything you do, who you talk to, where you go. So those are ways that he might emotionally and psychologically abuse you. And this happens to many, many women. Have any of you ever experienced purely the emotional abuse?
Yeah, this is me. I dealt with emotional abuse where no one's going to want to after I left their relationship. And this is a different ex. He was never physical, but, yeah, he would say, like, nobody's going to want you, you're not that cute, stuff like that.
Some other ways that there could be abuse in the relationship, and some people, I don't know if people really realize that if you are, especially if you're married, You have a responsibility to your husband or to your wife or to your spouse, whoever you're married to. If you are the one making the money in the relationship, you can't just say, oh, I'm not going to give you food for or money for food. Like, I'm not giving you grocery money like that. You can't do that. That's actually an illegal abuse. And a lot of people don't know that. If the person that you're with is controlling all of the money in the relationship, they take your money or your social security check, make you ask for money or refuse to give you money. And this again is if you are in a marital relationship or a legal, some type of legal partnership or relationship. If they are doing these things to you, like it's wrong, it's illegal. And you do have the right to food, to shelter, to clothing. And most people don't realize that that is abuse. In my own marriage, there were times when I would have to go and beg my friends and family for food money. Sometimes it would get that bad. I would have to go and, you know, can I just have $50 so I can buy my kids some formula, please? So a lot of people don't know that that is a form of abuse too. Have you guys ever like gone through situations where you didn't have enough for yourself because of the person that you were with?
Oh yes, absolutely. This one of my relationships was it involved all of the abuse that possibly could involve emotional, psychological. I worked two jobs and I was going to college at the time, and all of my student loan money was taken, and I ended up with like $260,000 in debt. It took me years to get that down to a lot less, and I didn't even end up finishing college because I ran out of student loan money. But it was used for many other things, and I still would go and was forced to go get Medicaid and food stamps because I had to feed the kids. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyone else?
Yeah, I don't have anything.
So I'm going to continue on. So I think that it's really important for us to like understand what domestic violence is so that we can recognize it when it happens. Do you guys know what emotional, psychological, and physical abuse looks like? Like, tell me what your ideas of those things are. Who would like to go first? Corinne, you go first.
Yeah, I think that like emotional and physical abuse consists of anything that someone is doing just to put you down, to harm you, to make you feel less than.
Mm-hmm. Amanda, what about you? Amanda, go ahead. Go ahead, Amanda.
I didn't hear that question. I apologize.
Mm-hmm. What do you think emotional, psychological, or physical abuse looks like?
Oh, gosh. Well, I think that physical abuse is obviously, like, physical, and I think psychological and emotional abuse is pretty close together. And, you know, I honestly am not even 100% sure what the difference between the two is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So psychological abuse would be something like, for example,
mind games.
Yeah, thank you. Mind games. That's exactly what it is. So say, for example, you two have children together, right? And you're depressed because he's abusive. And because you're depressed, he threatens to tell CPS that you're neglecting your children and you shouldn't have your kids. That's psychological abuse. He's playing mind games with you. Like, you're already depressed because of this stuff that you're going through with the relationship. For him to then turn it into this, you know, manipulative thing where he's going to take the children away, that's psychological abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes in the relationship, the abuser will threaten to commit suicide or threaten to kill you. they might try, if they have charges on them, they might try to force you to drop charges. They might try to intimidate you with weapons, knives. They might try to intimidate you physically. I don't know if you've ever had a man sort of step up on you. I'm not even sure how to describe it other than that, but just to physically step up on you and his whole body becomes a threat. Have you guys ever experienced that?
Yep. Nope.
Yes.
No.
So it's really important to sort of recognize these things, because if you don't recognize them when they occur, then you might not say, okay, this is a flag. This could get worse. You know what I mean? Like, you want to recognize these flags when they happen. Physical intimidation. If a man, like I said, steps up on you, if he raises his hand towards you, if he threatens you in any way, some guys will be like, oh, I'll throw you up against the wall. Threats like that, that is psychological intimidation, and it could get to the point where they actually act out on it. So what should you do? And one thing that I want to bring to that most people don't know is, let's guess for a second, how long do you think it takes for a woman to leave that type of relationship? If she's in an abusive relationship, how many times do you think she has to leave before she actually leaves? Like, how many times does it take for her to actually leave?
I don't think it's even an amount. Sometimes she never leaves. Sometimes she leaves in a body bag. Most times she leaves in a body bag. And most people leave when they've had enough. You said what now?
I said it used to be 8 when I was married before.
Amanda?
You know, I'm guessing multiple, you know, double digits, honestly, especially if there's kids involved, especially if, you know, a lot of times I know that control becomes a thing, and the abuser makes it to where they're in control of the situation. So I know in my case, I ended up not working. I had none of my own money. You know, everything I did was controlled. You know, I would get text messages about how long I was at a store and what I was doing at that store. So I was being followed. It was fucking crazy. And so, you know, you think you can get into that point where you think that you have no other choice, because it's very easy when you fall into that, to believe what you're being told every single day. You know, it's really hard to get out of. It's a very hard situation to get out of. And the thing is that, you have to do it yourself, because no matter how hard your family may try, like, no matter how hard anybody else is going to try, the only person that's going to make you leave is you. And you have to find the strength for that. And my biggest thing was, I didn't want my girls seeing somebody be weak like that anymore. So I had to walk away, you know? And so I did. And it was the hardest decision in my life, but, and it's taken me years. I'm still rebuilding and still learning, and I'm, you know, I'll be okay if I'm never in a relationship again, but
yeah. I think the statistics might have updated, but when I was studying it some years ago, my answer would have been really close to Amanda's, around 7 or 8 times. On average, statistically speaking, it takes about 7 or 8 times a woman will leave her abuser before she, and this is leaving and coming back. She will leave and then come back and leave and then come back. And this will happen about 7 or 8 times before she finally leaves. And if it doesn't happen, like, there are many, many women who die before they get to that final leaving point. Many women who die. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Go ahead.
No, somebody else is trying to go too, so they can go ahead and go first. I thought somebody was going to go. No?
No, that was me. Go ahead.
Okay, so may I say something, please? You said yes?
Yeah.
All right, well, this is Tawanda. I want to first say that this topic is really interesting for me, because I've always struggled when it comes to domestic violence for several different reasons. Growing up in a household with a mother and father, my mom was like
She was like 5'4", 115 pounds. My dad was always like, well, 6 feet, 230, 240. And I always called it more verbal abuse for the whole family, not just one person, because he was always angry. He would talk a lot of shit, and he was very intimidating. So growing up seeing that, I hated it. I hated the fact that he was bigger than everybody. He would talk shit, and everyone would be afraid. No one would say anything. Not my mom, not my sister, not my brother. And with me, I would always be a challenge. I wouldn't be disrespectful, but I would have smirks here and there. So I remember when I got my first job out of college, working as a social worker, in the case management field, I had several women that would come into for getting help and resources that were in domestic situations, and I judged them. I was very angry with them. I was angry with them because I didn't take it from my dad, and I didn't believe women should take it. Like, I had a problem with it. I just did not understand why, if a man reared up at you or abused you in some type of way, why you didn't do something to him. Like, I'm just not having it. Throw the hot grits on him, fight back, get him when he sleep. Like, I'm just not having it. Like, and I couldn't understand, and I was upset with these women that would come in and would be in tears and trying to get away and go into the shelter about in domestic situations. I know of so many situations where women did get away and went back and got killed. Like, I was really angry until I actually sat and had a conversation with people, and they explained, you're on the outside looking in. You've never been in it to understand. And guess what? I've never been in it, so I really did understand. And then I started to have compassion, you know, to a degree, because I'm like, okay, this is really, really rough. You know, hearing a single mom that couldn't leave, or hearing a woman because she didn't have a job and he had all the money. I mean, there were just so many situations. And then people who knew me, even when I had my own relationships, I would tell guys, like, listen, I don't know how long this is going to last. I don't know what's going to happen, but there's a few things that I hate. Number one, being talked to a certain type of way. If you ever think about hitting me, I'm going to kill you. Like, I mean, it's like my pet peeve. Like, you have no idea how much I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. I hate men who hit women. And the last thing I want to say really quickly, I remember when I was in high school, I think I might have said this on the call before, I might have been in 11th grade, and my sister was in the 9th grade, and there was a guy who was like over 300 pounds at our school who was bullying her. And one morning, we got off the bus, she was in the corner waiting till they let us inside the building to open the school. And she was kind of scared, and she was in the corner. I'm like, what is going on? She's like, this guy, he's been bullying me and blah, blah, blah. And I went in a rage, because remember, I'm thinking about my dad, like, oh, my dad's a big guy. He's bullying us at home. He's talking shit. He's cursing us out and blah, blah, blah. So I went in the cafeteria, and this guy named Donald, he was sitting at the table with all his friends, big old dude, everybody flocking around him like he's Biggie Smalls. And he just thought he was the king, and he was always picking on everyone. And my sister was quiet. She didn't bother nobody. And I went up to him, and he was like, oh, what's up with you? Yeah, because I had your sister in tears. You come to get some too? And I looked at him, and I knew I couldn't beat this guy, right? And I said, yo, well, you picked on the wrong one. I don't even really know what I said, because I think I, like, lost my mind for a couple of seconds. And I looked at him in his eye, and he didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't even know what I was going to do. But his eyes got big, like, oh, shit, something's getting ready to go down. And I grabbed a chair at a table, and I chunked it at him real hard. And he, like, fell back. And everybody's like, oh. And, again, I knew I couldn't beat him, but it didn't even matter. But I said, if you ever do that again, like, I'll kill you. And I'm definitely not even violent. I don't even know how I would kill him. But it just really made me angry. But I just said that to say, I know we as women, we go through so many different sorts of things, but we got to get our power back. We got to have our self-esteem. We got to have great associations, because when we take our power back, it takes their power. Because only a coward will intimidate a woman, whether it's physically, emotionally, or any type of way. And I'm sure you can tell in my voice, I absolutely hate it.
I think that when you have seen abuse or domestic violence, or you have experienced abuse or domestic violence, it leaves scars, right? It leaves trauma. And everybody experiences trauma in a different way, and it affects people in a different way. And some people are able to be resilient and to grow out of that. Some people are able to fight back, and other people are not, you know, they just respond differently. So we're going to get on to, we're going to discuss how people respond to these types of traumas. But first, we're going to take a quick break.
This is Corinne, and here's today's training news break. Today marks the International Friendship Day. It's an occasion dedicated to celebrating those we love. It's also the perfect chance for retailers to strengthen customer relationships while reaching new audience, offering customers exclusive rewards to share with friends in celebration of International Friendship Day. It does have the potential to be your best campaign yet. That's it for today's training news break. Now, back to the show.
Are you enjoying the show? Help us bring more great content to you by donating. Every bit helps. You can donate to us by visiting our Patreon page. You can go to www.patreon.com and search for Rogue Girlfriends Across America to support the show. Or you can donate to us by visiting our Anchor page. You can visit www.anchor.fm and search for us by searching Rogue Girlfriends Across America. We appreciate the donation. Now back to the show.
All right, we are back from the break. So I'm going to use myself as an example. Some of the reasons why, when I was experiencing some of the things that I experienced during my marriage, some of the reasons why I didn't leave, and this might be some reasons that other women experience also. So I would like to share them because sometimes people feel like, oh, I'm the only one that goes through this, or, oh, this is the only one that, you know, I'm the only one that this happens to, and it's just not true. One of the main reasons why I did not leave because of some of the things that I experienced was because my husband was the breadwinner. I mean, he made the money, he paid the rent, he bought the groceries, he was the provider. And at the time, because of some experiences and some things that that were going on in my life, I depended on him. My children and my child at the time, I only had my oldest, but my child and I, we both depended on him. And so I didn't see how I could survive financially without him at the time. Like, these are all reasons that you tell yourself because you don't feel as though you have the power to leave or the strength to leave. Another reason why was that I didn't want to be alone. I was afraid of trying to get out there. I didn't want to have another relationship. There are so many other reasons. And when you look back on it, it feels like because I'm in a stronger place now, those reasons feel weak to me. But when you're in it and you're at that level, they don't feel weak. They feel as though they are like insurmountable obstacles. They feel like canyons that you just have no way to climb up and no way to jump down. Like, you cannot cross them. And I don't know if other women understand, you know, that these things are surpassable, because when you're in it, it seems so dark that you just can't see your way through. Have any of you guys had or thought or maybe knew somebody that thought those things when they were in these types of relationships?
Oh, yeah, of course. I was afraid. That was my biggest thing, is being afraid of the unknown. What was I supposed to do? So that was my biggest thing, was fear. And then I just let it engulf me and take me over. And from that point on, you know, until I got strong enough to leave, I was absolutely miserable.
Anyone else?
I was afraid that I wouldn't be able to pay my bills or even eat because he made more money than I did and I didn't make very much money. But at some point I just decided that I would rather be hungry than be miserable. And I mean, I definitely did go through some times where I was hungry, but I don't regret my decision at all.
Anyone else?
This is C. I've never been in a situation where I wasn't financially able to leave, but I know I had a friend who lived close to me, and I used to let her and her kids sleep in the house whenever things were hectic at her house. And I offered her to move in, but she never wanted to. And she's still in the same situation, like a year or two later. But, I mean, I understand why she decided to, I mean, I don't co-sign with her, but I understand her reasoning for wanting to go back and stay.
Mm-hmm. Tawanda, in your experience when you were assisting these women who were in domestic violence situations, did they ever tell you their reasons for staying?
You hit the nail on the head in reference to what you just said. Of course, the first thing is people feel like he had a bad day. They will make excuses for the guy. And then most situations was because of financial. You know, either the person did not work or either they were the actual breadwinner. And when you have children, you don't have resources, you're estranged from your family. But let me say this really, really quickly, too, because I never forget one time. At that very same job that I had a lady call one day, and I worked at the Salvation Army as a social worker, and we had caller ID, so I had, you know, I could see some of the numbers that called in unless they blocked it, and I said, "Hello, Salvation Army," and she said, "I need your help. My husband's been beating me. I think he's going to eventually kill me. Like, I don't really know what to do," and we talked for like less than 1 minute, and I'm like, "Oh my God, like, are you serious? Like, what's happening?" She said, "Listen, I need some help, da da da." She said, "Oh, I gotta go. He's coming." And I'm like, Wait. And then she hung up, and I was like, and I wrote the number down when she started talking and said, you know, started saying what she was saying. I went ahead and wrote 843-662 because this was in Florence, South Carolina. And then I had the number written down. I had no idea what her name was, but I had resources to be able to get it. And then a couple, like a minute or two later, I said, "Salvation Army, this is so-and-so, blah, blah, blah. How can I help you?" Because I'm answering the phone, so I think the secretary was out or whatever. And when I said that, he said, the guy, it was a guy calling back. He said, "I got your name. If you come here, you have anyone come here, I'll kill you." And hung up. And I just sat there for a couple of seconds like, what? And I just said Salvation Army and my name. He knows where I'm at. So for the rest of the day, I sat watching the door. People came in because I had no idea somebody could come in at any minute and blow my brains out. Because the thing about domestic violence, if people don't know, friends get killed too. People on the sidelines get killed too. People that give you a place to stay get killed too. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, that really scared me to death. And guess what I did? I did nothing. I didn't even call anybody. He scared me to death. But I couldn't do nothing else. I was 23 years old. I didn't know what I could do other than be scared.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you're in those kind of situations and you are the person who I'll call, you know, you're basically the third party. You're not the person, one of the people in the relationship. Sometimes the only thing that you can do would be to call outside assistance, whether it would be, you know, 911 or emergency response. Because if you get involved yourself, like you said, not only could you get injured, you could get killed. This person is already attacking somebody who they claim they love, you know, they claim they love, and they won't hesitate to do it to someone else. So the safest thing to do in that situation is to be on the sideline and call an authority for assistance to handle it. And the another thing that people don't realize about these situations is that often in many domestic violence situations, when the police do show up to take away the abuser, sometimes the abusee, the person who is being abused, will fight the police on behalf of the abuser. Mm-hmm. Now, I've never seen it happen, and I've never experienced this, but I have heard of it happening, and I've heard descriptions of these kind of things taking place. So mm-hmm. You don't ever want to be the person, if you're a third party, to try and break up a DV couple. You just don't. You get outside people, of authority, the police or whatever, who know how to handle these kind of situations. So I want to give, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of a domestic violence hotline. I don't know how many resources women out there have, but I would like to give out this information for anybody who is in a domestic violence situation and they don't know where to go and they don't know how to get help. This domestic violence number is a national hotline. It's 1-800-799-7233. Again, it's a domestic violence national hotline, and it's 1-800-799-7233. And if you are in a domestic violence situation, or you are the friend of somebody who is in a domestic violence situation and you just want to get this person resources, please call this number so that you can get assistance. And you could really save somebody's life. You can honestly save somebody's life. I want to talk a little bit about ways to encourage yourself, if you're in a DV relationship, or encourage somebody who is in a DV relationship to make healthy choices. So what are some healthy choices or ways to encourage someone to healthy choices that, you know, you might be able to give to someone out there? Annie, you go first.
You know, honestly, my biggest thing is, you know, I remember one of my sisters and I always talk about it. And what she always says to me is that she missed me so much because I was never around with the family at that time, because I was always hiding or whatever. And you don't want to put your family or your children through that. And that's the important part. Like take a look around at what you're doing to yourself and to those that you love. And, you know, you're stronger to walk away and build your own life. And it may be scary and hard, but it's doable. And there's people out there that will help you.
Right. Tawanda?
I would have to say, if I had to say one thing, get yourself a good support system and positive associations. Associations can save your life. Regardless of what type of situation a person is in, when you have one or two people that are around you, if you have one or two girlfriends, for example, someone positive, someone who loves you, someone who cares about you, someone who truly wants the best for you, they can be an ear to listen. They can be a house that you can stay at. They can be that outlet that's not abusive if you ever need that situation. I know hundreds of women over the last 20 years that's been in domestic situations, and over half of them have said, I didn't tell anyone because I didn't trust anyone. I didn't have anyone who wouldn't judge me, and so on and so forth. Sometimes as a friend, you got to be a friend to shut up. Just shut up and listen. Just shut up and say, hey, I don't care what's going on. You can come here. So having associations so someone would know you are not alone.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
This is C. I agree with both ladies. I think that it's important to know your self-worth and know that you're above anything that anyone's saying about you. You're worth more than that, and you're not worth someone belittling you.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else?
I think learning the pattern, like, because I was always sucked in by, like, the rainbows and hearts, and so if I would have known sooner that was, like, pretty typical of abusive situations, maybe I could have gotten out sooner. Mm-hmm.
Right. And what Amanda is talking about is that it's called the cycle of violence. So what happens in the cycle of violence is that first the abuser starts out very sweet, and then he gets a little bit, you know, mean, and then he gets meaner. And then finally there's a point to which there's a snap almost in the relationship, and he'll physically hit or abuse. And afterwards, there'll be sort of a cooling down honeymoon period where he's back to being sweet and nice and kind. And what she was saying, you know, the kisses and rainbows. And that doesn't last much very long. And it starts to slip back into a pattern and cycle of violence. So that's what's called the cycle of violence. I just want to wrap this up. Unless you guys have any other thoughts, I want to, you know, just put it out there. there. There is help for you. There is hope for you. If you have been in a domestic violence relationship or you are in a domestic violence relationship, there are shelters that can take you in and hide you. Even if, and I want to say this specifically because there are, I have seen women who were married to cops who were being abused, and they were terrified. They didn't know if they could go anywhere. They had nowhere to hide. You can go to DV shelters. They are required by law to prevent anybody, including the police, from entering the premises. You can be safe even if you are being abused and you are the spouse of an abusive cop. You can get help. So please make sure that if you are in an abusive relationship that you get the help that you need. Does anybody have any other thoughts?
Well, this is someone, I think the last I was saying in reference to what you just said is don't take anything for granted. I know a lot of time, like I said, I was a person that was judgmental and didn't really understand it. You know, you never know what someone is going through until you walk a mile in their shoes. So regardless of what spectrum we are that listen to this call all over the world, just don't judge anyone. Don't take anything for granted. Be helpful. Sometimes listening means everything, because this actually is something very serious. I have no idea how many people die at the hands of domestic violence daily, but I know that it's too many. And we definitely need to make sure that we do a better job at being there for the person if we can.
Right. I just want to thank everybody for calling in and for listening to the show and for giving all of your input. I greatly appreciate each and every one of you that was able to share and to give your stories, because it can make all the difference in the world to someone out there who thinks that they're alone. So thank you for that.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right. Thank We're going to wrap up the show. And I hope that you will join us the next time on Real Girlfriends Across America. This has been Kay. Good night, ladies.
Thank you. Looking forward to hearing your outro.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to yet another episode of the Real Girlfriends Across America. Make sure you tune in tomorrow. We're here Sunday through Thursday at 9 p.m. EDT time or 6 p.m. PDT time. Make sure you tune in on all of our platforms, and that's anywhere where podcasts are being played. Make sure you visit us at www.realgirlfriend.org or on Instagram at realgirlfriend7, that's the number 7, Twitter at realgirlfriend7, or on our Facebook page at Real Girlfriends Across America. We can't wait to chat with you next, and until next time, have a great and awesome day.